Hello, and welcome to Wellesley College's Adventures in Anthropology. My name is Jennifer Pawson, and today we will be discussing Cultures in Secrecy. This is the first of five installments and is focused on personal secrecy. After reading about many of the secrets people will be given access to due to the Freedom of Information Act, I wondered, why do we have secrets in the first place? Is there something innate in humanity about having secrets? After researching further evidence, most all psychological, sociological, and anthropological literature tends to point to, yes, secrets are part of humanity. For better or worse, it seems that lying, deceit, and secrecy go hand in hand with society and culture. The most common example I found of documented secrecy, as it relates to interpersonal relationships, comes from altruistic lies. These are lies or myths told to other people to make them feel better. These range from reassurances that victims of accidents do not suffer, to religious beliefs, to childhood fairy tales. The science has no empirical concept of a soul or spiritual aspect of the body. Often children are told that those who love them look down upon them after their deaths, as though to help ease the pain of loss. The various myths surrounding Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, and other mythological creatures help maintain a childhood innocence. Levi Strauss wrote about myths and their commonalities across cultures in his book, Myth and Meaning. The childhood tales we as a culture tell to our children are not only secrets and lies, but they also carry specific cultural data. These childhood fairy tales and explanations have ways of describing to children how to fit into a society. Take, for instance, the myth of Santa Claus. Although based around the Christian holiday Christmas, the figure of Santa has been transformed into a more globally recognized legend. And this legend helps children understand gift reciprocity laws that exist within our culture. Malinowski talked about this in many of his works. Gifts are given to people and in most cases are expected to be reciprocated. One person gives a gift and the other person is expected to be indebted to them. They have to either give a better gift or provide a better service to the original gift giver. In the Santa Claus legend, it would appear that most children believe that if they are good and behave well, then they will receive what they ask Santa to bring them. So children that live up to the expectations of their parents can expect a reward. Indeed, later in their lives, children will have been conditioned enough to believe that if they work hard and do what is expected of them, they will receive a gift of some kind, usually of monetary value. We have seen this in the latest headlines, such as when AIG executives expected their yearly bonuses since they had fulfilled their contract. So this form of lying or secrecy in myths helps train future generations how to behave according to cultural expectations. Another form of secrecy is less benign than altruistic lying, such as secrets that have detrimental effects on interpersonal relationships. And according to other studies, secrecy within an anonymous context can actually cause a group to become more cohesive. So we'll first examine the examples of how discovering secrets can destroy relationships. For instance, parents learn something about their children and cut off all contact with their offspring. A group learns something about a member and ostracizes them. Or it might be that someone manages to maintain a secret throughout their entire life and it is later discovered after their death, only to negatively impact the social status of their relatives. I've witnessed examples of these in my life. A friend confessed to their parents that they were homosexual, and their parents refused to speak about the subject again, pretending that the confession never occurred. This, of course, led to the child feeling as though they had been forgotten or were somehow less than perfect. And this breaks down in an anthropological context, since relationships between people are the primary source of all things that we create in a culture. We work together and create those relationships and friendships in order to provide ourselves with a common structure, a way to move around in society without a problem. So by telling their parents something that they believe that they should have kept instead secret, they actually are led to believe that this hurts their relationship with their parents. In other cases, especially children, find out something embarrassing about another child, and then they tease them and they leave them out of groups and things. This is a common this is another common tale that's often told through the song of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, Rudolph has a red nose, and therefore all the children leave him out of all their childhood games. This actually occurs on quite a frequent basis. In other cases, people after their death are discovered to have had certain qualities. They've been serial killers. They had secret identities. And their family finds out about it only after they've died and feel shame or rejection from the outer community because of something that they didn't even know about their family member. For instance, relatives of Nazi officials distanced themselves after they learned that their family name was connected to the Nazi party in order to preserve their social status and to prevent neighbors from learning who their ancestors were. These types of secrets are designed to maintain social connections, even if it means hiding one's own identity. However, there are secrets that promote group cohesion, and particularly individual secrets. A psychological study that was conducted in Minnesota showed that when in groups, secrecy also has a beneficial aspect. In this study, researchers focused on a group of mushroom pickers, and they discovered that mushroomers use secrecy to smooth out the hierarchy of the group. This article, entitled Secrecy, Trust, and Dangerous Leisure, Generating Group Cohesion in Voluntary Organizations, written by Gary Allen Fine and Lori Hollifield, discussed the idea that mycological societies, such as this one in Minnesota, use secrecy for a variety of manners, particularly in order to create some semblance of cohesion and the ability to work together. In particular, quote, members offer an ethical justification for the secrecy. They claim that they prefer the satisfaction of finding mushrooms for themselves, which provides a sense of personal accomplishment, end quote. And in order to do this, this helps create their own identity within the group. So by using secrecy to hide their favorite spots to pick mushrooms, group members are able to actually create a separate identity within the group so that they're not just simply a nameless member, but rather a particular person that has either a good spot to pick one kind of mushroom or knows places to avoid. Also, the sharing of secrets helps to reflect the fact that members have created friendships or have created a social relationship with other members. Quote, Mark tells me that he doesn't begrudge Jerry the 800 to 1,000 morals Jerry finds on his father's property, because at the end of last season, Jerry told him about one of his other moral spots he hadn't used, end quote. This is part of the field notes that Alan Fine and Hollifield used to interpret the relationships between groups. In addition, voluntary organizations such as this one use some techniques in order to allow people, new initiates, novices, to understand the importance of secrecy. One such mushroomer commented, quote, At first, I wanted to share information, but no one else did. So, brackets, my wife and I stopped. End bracket. It was kind of sad, but it was like putting pearls before swine. End quote. And in this case, it's part of the initiation rite to hide information from other members. It's actually considered normal to have secrets rather than to share them. Due to this, Fine and Hollyfield concluded that secrecy in group organizations helps smooth out the hierarchy. It creates a level playing field, if you will, between the novices, the intermediate members, and the really experienced members in the organization. And to have these secrets helps people not feel as though they are disconnected from other members. And so in doing, it helps actually create a group rather than destroy the interpersonal relationships. So lying in secrets can have both a detrimental effect and an advantageous effect on group secrecy and on individual secrecy and on interpersonal relationships. Sociological studies such as Georg Simmel, The Sociology of Secrecy and of Secret Societies, also points to the ability of people to use secrets as a way of giving value to knowledge. It helps people discover what knowledge is important and what knowledge isn't. In this instance, I'm talking more about if people know that someone thing is being kept secret from them, they want to know that information more. They want to discover that information. And so in doing, the secret actually isn't necessarily important, but the fact that it's being kept secret is what makes that information, that knowledge, more important to people. In Cecilia's box on... In Cecilia's box, Lying, Moral Choice in Public and Private Life, he discusses how lies are very similar to secrets, but he makes a clear distinction in another book, Secrets, about the fact that secrets are sometimes less detrimental. He quotes, "Lying and secrecy differ, however, in one important respect. Whereas I take lying to be prima facie wrong, with a negative presumption against it from the outset, secrecy need not be. Whereas every lie stands in need of justification, all secrets do not. Secrecy may accompany the most innocent as well as the most lethal of acts." So basically he's saying that although secrets and lies are very similar in many respects, he also states that secrets are not necessarily meant to deceive the person they're being told to, because lies are meant to deceive. They are, from the outset, meant to be a misrepresentation of what one person believes. But secrets are more so about concealing information. You're not necessarily misleading someone, but you're rather just preventing them from knowing all the information. In this book, Secrets, Secrecy and the Moral Choice, he states, quote, "Secrecy is as indispensable to human beings as fire and is greatly feared. Both enhance and protect life, yet both can stifle, lay waste, spread out of all control. Both may be used to guard intimacy or to invade it, to nurture or to consume," end quote. And for this, he's talking about the fact that secrets are part of society. They've been around since we can remember. The myth of Pandora's box has been around since Greek ages. In fact, most people would argue that secrecy has pervaded human society. It is not meant to change human society, but rather just to exist within it. So, in studying this, Bach really comments on the fact that secrets are part of human existence. They are truly part of it. And he tries to describe this by having us imagine four different worlds, one in which someone can always find out our secrets, one in which we can find out everyone else's secrets, someone where no one can keep secrets from anyone else, and finally where we can keep all the secrets we want. And he talks about how the fact that none of these four worlds have ever really existed. We can't guard all secrets from people wanting to find them out, but at the same point in time, we can guard some secrets. So sociological and psychological research studies of secrecy have all pointed to the idea that secrecy has existed as part of human nature, that it's detrimental and beneficial to human interpersonal relationships, and that it helps give value to knowledge and helps us protect certain information from other people. In anthropological studies, particularly that of Kenneth M. George, we see that secrets help create a border. George studied a cultural group in Sulawesi Highlands in Africa, and they used secrecy as a manner of protecting their religion from Catholic or Muslim involvement. He notes that the secret isn't so much to prevent their information from being spread to outsiders, but to prevent outsiders' beliefs and ideologies from invading their personal space. So in this way, the ability to know those secrets and to understand how their religion worked and how their culture functioned was the way in which the members of that society were able to distinguish between outsiders and insiders, between a safe haven and a possible threat. So secrecy in many ethnographic and anthropological terms is used to create boundaries, is used to distinguish between peoples and cultures and ideas. What this study of secrecy has completed is that secrecy does appear to help and to create and nurture a form of culture. It creates interpersonal relationships, such as we saw in the Mycological Society in Minnesota through Fines and Hollyfield's article. It gives value to knowledge, which helps create social hierarchies and help understand the value of information flow in a system, as we saw in Georg Simmel's work. And through Kenneth George's work, we see that secrecy creates a boundary or a border between populations. And with that, we conclude our first podcast on cultures of secrecy. Next time, we will be discussing how the cultural phenomenon known as post-secret helps us understand culture secrecy in more detail. I hope you'll all tune in next time, and thank you very much. My name is Jennifer Pawson, and if you want to learn any more information, sources are available underneath the link to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye. Tschüss.